Residents in rural Gisborne are feeling forgotten following the cyclone. We were speaking earlier this morning to Sir Brian Roche, of course, who had been tasked with the government's cyclone recovery investigation, really, through a task force. And we are now starting to see the parameters for the buyouts of properties in certain areas, particularly in Hawke's Bay so far, and Auckland. More information will be revealed next week. But for many, they're feeling forgotten, particularly those in rural Gisborne, says our correspondent. And we welcome him, Matthew Rosenberg, in Gisborne. Kia ora, Matthew.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Matthew's a local democracy reporter based out of the Gisborne Herald's newsroom. What are people telling you?
Yeah, so last week I caught up with a group of residents, Catherine, in Waipawa, who were upset about the state of their road. Now, as this turned out, there's a little bit more to the story than just the road. These sorts of complaints, roading complaints, aren't too uncommon in Gisborne, especially in rural areas like Waipawa. The roading network is really fragile here. There's a number of reasons for that. So last week, I made it out to Branson Road, which is one such rural road in Gisborne. It's about 20 minutes from the city. I was expecting to meet with a man by the name of David Hunt. Sure enough, Dave was there, but so was the whole street, Catherine. It felt like all of Branson Road had turned out to have a crack at the council over the state of their road, and it was a bit of a community day out, had that kind of feel to it. But yeah, as I was saying, as is often the case with these kinds of stories, is there's often a story within the story. And as people began sharing their experience about the cyclone, it became pretty clear to me that there's a bit more going on in Branson Road than in the potholes and the slippery mess the silt had created. I had the privilege of meeting 81-year-old Jim, who's living under his shed in a caravan. He lives out there by himself in rural Gisborne, keeps himself busy during the day working on his tractor. His home's been yellow stickered, which means he can't live in it. So many of those homes across Gisborne and in the wider region. So he's been forced to live in his caravan, even though he's got a transportable home which has been dropped off. It's yet to have the power and water linked up. And what really blew me away about Jim's story was that he had actually lived through three of these floods. The first being in 1948, then of course Cyclone Bola in the 80s, and now Gabriel. And I asked him what keeps him going in these difficult times, and he had such a simple yet poignant answer for me. He said, just don't give up. And next to that shed, which his caravan's under, there was another shed, and he took me in there, and it honestly blew me away. It was like a museum. Barely a lifetime collector, there's barely a patch of clear space on the walls. He had endless bolts all organized and tools and car badges lining the walls. It blew me away. So just such a character and a great example of the resilience of people down here, but also quite difficult to see that vulnerability of people living in a situation like his. And I know he's not alone, especially as we head into winter, people still feeling the pinch.
This business of being forgotten, could specifically what they were talking about, just the fact that silt and the road repairs just seem to be taking so long, or are there other ways they fear that everyone's just moved on?
Yeah, I think it is just how long everything takes. A lot of people are just waiting for insurance. They're waiting for, like you said, repairs to be made to their roads. The council have a massive job in maintaining the network across the region. It's a really big network. There's a small ratepayer base here, so there's a lot of work that needs doing. And I guess getting out to small roads like Branson, which is off the main track, it's probably not always a high priority. But you know, there are real people living out there, and they've got some very real issues. And I think meeting Jim was just a really good example of that.
What's happening with a local swimming club that's unhappy?
Yeah, Comet isn't happy, Catherine. It's a long-standing club in the region. It's been operating since 1958. So for some background, Gisborne is gearing up to open a state-of-the-art $40-plus million swimming complex by the name of Kiwa Pools. And that new facility includes a dedicated learn to swim area. So Comet pushed for the current pool in Gisborne to be open. That's being replaced by the new pools. So they have been around for a long time. They're a big part of the community. And they're upset because late last week they found out they'd missed out on the contract for that new learn to swim pool to an Australian company by the name of Belgravia Leisure. And it's actually created a little bit of a stir in the community. A lot of people have hit out at the council, pointing out they've opted with an offshore company instead of one which has been sowing into the community since the 50s. And I talked to Comet's manager, Rochelle Summerton, who told me that she had been left extremely let down by this decision. It doesn't impact all of the club, just the learn to swim element. So they'll still be able to operate their training squads out of the new pool. But Summerton told me that the thought of having the whole group in one space was something that they'd dreamed of. The council were the ones who ultimately made the call on who won that contract. They've told us that Comet and Belgravia were the only two who went for it. And they went for Belgravia because of the additional benefits they could offer the community. The Australian company is offering free swimming lessons to 80 children every year from lower socioeconomic families, and also full immersion te reo swimming lessons. So some pretty cool initiatives from Belgravia. As far as the contract goes, they'll have it for 3 years with two rights of renewal. So it could be 2032 before Comet gets another crack at trying to secure that. But to top it all off, Catherine, a member of the public has set up a petition protesting this outcome. There's been over 2,000 signatures so far. So it'll be interesting to see if anything comes of that.
Yeah, it's interesting that I mean, it's a world I'm just not familiar with, I guess. You just didn't presume that that it was kind of a global business, really. But there you go. It's an interesting one.
Belgravia's a massive company. They have assets. They're in charge of assets or over $2 billion. So it is a big business, and it's interesting to think that, places like Gisborne are on the list of
So they're asset
locations for that.
managers. I suppose you think of Learn to Swim, don't you, as often just being an incredibly dedicated group of people, a small number of people getting by, often small business people back in the day who would get by earning enough. But is this more about almost a facility management company coming in?
I'm not 100% sure on how the operation works, but I did, when I was doing my research for the article, I did see that they had on their site that they were they had over $2 billion of assets under their control. So I think it's
Yeah.
safe to say they are a pretty big operation.
I'm just looking at it now. Belgravia Leisure, connecting community to leisure. It's a leisure management provider. Very interesting stuff. All right, but anyway, the locals are protesting. It looks like the deal's done, however. Now you've been in Rotorua and meeting some folk, some people behind the iwi station, Radio Ngāti Porou. Tell me a little bit more.
I have. Last week I tripped up to Rotorua, which is about 2 hours north of Gisborne. And it was a really insightful trip, not just from the perspective of seeing how the station works, but also just the drive, the 2+ hour drive over State Highway 35. I think if you travel anywhere north of Gisborne, it just becomes pretty apparent pretty quickly how much fallout there is from the cyclone. There's plenty of dropouts, potholes. At one point, about an hour and a half south, or rather half an hour south of Rotorua, the road is diverted to higher ground. If you look down, you can see where the highway used to be. It's right next to a raging river. So pretty safe to say, I think that State Highway 35 is the most vulnerable it's ever been. But it really gave me an added respect for the people who call the coast home. And in Rotorua, I met with two of the managers of the station, Irana Keelan-Reedy and Paula Brooking, and they were just super real with me about the situation up there. Every time it rains now, the people are on edge, they say. It's having an impact on things like education and getting to work. If there's a bad forecast, you think twice about making the trip because in the back of your mind, you're wondering, could you get stuck? And it's questions like that which people up the coast are having to live with on almost a daily basis. So it was awesome to hear firsthand from them, what they're going through, really important. But also just some of the work they're doing at the station. And since these weather events have become more of a regular thing in the last 6 years, a lot of the station's purpose has changed to providing really important weather messaging. Arana told me that they've got so many contracts in civil defence, they normally know what's happening first, so they get those messages out really quickly. And the messaging is really consistent. Basically, just stay off the roads and have at least 3 days of supplies on hand. But they also had some really heartening stories. Paula is the commentator for Ngāti Piro East Coast Rugby, and they were talking about how he makes the game come alive, and obviously they broadcast those live on the station. And you know, sometimes the team might be down 70-0, but Irana was saying that you tune in and you think they were winning the way he was telling the story. So just a really wonderful, important part of the community, that radio station.
It is, but also just the point that you're making again is that, you know, in these more isolated areas, I mean, those roads, you can't even call them potholes. I mean, they're absolutely hazardous in many parts of the district, right? And was there a sense of frustration at just how slow it seems to be to get things done?
Yeah, I think there is. I asked them what the mood is in the town. How are people coping? Do they sense that it's taken a real toll? And they said, yes, it clearly has, but people are pretty good at hiding it. People kind of just get on with it and pretend that everything's okay. So definitely having a massive impact on people's mental health, I think.
Thank you, Matthew. Really appreciate it. Matthew Rosenberg is a local democracy reporter. He's based out of the Gisborne Herald's newsroom.